This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Today on With the First Pick, now that we have nothing but time, Rick, we're taking an in-depth look at the AFC and NFC West draft grades. We'll hand out grades for each team. And while we're at it, we'll look back at the 2023 draft class. I added that one, Rick, just to see how those teams did and those rookies performed. No homework for you. I did all the heavy lifting. We'll take a peek. We looked at those guys to death. And, of course, we'll get through all these draft grades in the coming weeks. Because, again, Rick, we've got nothing but time on our hands. I'm Ryan Wilson. That's Rick Spielman. This is episode 156. And, Rick, because you asked for it, Debo gave me $25. I got a used television, and we have a new draft countdown board so I can make it work. How many days to the 2025 NFL draft?
It was on delay. Ryan, there are 352 days until the 2025 NFL draft. Do you know any famous 352?
Hey, look what else I did. Look at this.
8,448. We better get started, bud. We got to.
There you go. Look.
5:06:880 minutes.
And look at that little picture I got of us. I found that Terminator picture of you on the internet.
That was Miami days.
Yeah, that's the Dolphins days. You look like you either just killed someone or you're about to kill someone. Debo, I think that should be our new logo. This is our sitcom. This is Perfect Strangers. I'm happy-go-lucky Ryan. You're out there killing people during the day, and you probably own like a coffee shop at night. Maybe that's what you do.
Yeah, I'll be back.
There it is. That's on me. I shouldn't have done that. All right, Rick, 2024. The draft is finally behind us. Got a little time to gather our thoughts. We'll be going through every team, division by division, before starting our summer scouting series. And that'll be here before you know it. Already started putting the list together. Included James Pierce, because apparently he's pretty good. So he'll be on our list of guys to watch. Also, I should talk about this. That reminds me. We should tell all the people who watch and listen how much we appreciate them, Rick, because we need to ask them a little favor.
Oh.
If you have a second, just give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, and I don't think Debo would care if I said, if you leave a mailbag question and a 5-star review, we'll get to it at some point in the summer because we've got a little time on our hands. So thank you to all of you who watch and listen and comment. Last year went pretty good, Rick, according to Debo. So I don't know if he's just telling us that makes us feel good about ourselves. But in order to keep growing and getting better, leave us a 5-star review if you like what we do here. And a mailbag question, and Rick will answer it. All right, let's get to it. I'll go ahead.
I know Debo is going to work very hard through the summer correcting because I did, as I am, a stickler on rules, a stickler on following direction. There was some inconsistencies on that first homework assignment that came out for this show. And I was able to have a one-off with Debo.
Oh, you had a meeting without me.
Yeah. I was like, kind of cool. Like maybe I can have a staff meeting with Debo instead of just you and him all the time. So we had a one-off yesterday. And we did get it corrected. I did point it out because I figure that's my other role on this podcast is to help correct things that are wrong. And I think we're all going in the same direction.
What'd you say? You're just a guy with an oar?
Draft, huh?
We're just a guy with oars, right?
Yep. Just give me an oar. I'm just trying to row the boat the same direction everybody else is.
All right. Well, let's go. The first direction is the AFC West. And by the way, thank you for not bringing up Debo's mistake in the instructions, because I know he had the NFC East team on there. I saw it and I said, let's see if Rick notices this. I'm guessing you noticed.
And I was like, okay, thank you. It's like, is this, I thought it was a setup.
Well, I'm glad you and Debo could hash that out. All right, we're doing the AFC and NFC West today. Next week, when Debo will be an undisclosed location, we'll be doing the AFC and NFC South. So look forward to that. All right, let's go. First things first, we are starting with the Denver Broncos. You know what? Let's talk about these teams and we'll save the grades to give people a reason to keep watching and listening. All right, so their draft, the old Broncos draft. We know how it starts. Good old Bo Nix, 12th overall. The more I think about it, Rick, do you feel any better about it, just in terms of Sean Payton? And I was reading The Athletic. You probably saw the same thing I did. Nick Kosmider wrote this. Nick Kosmider, the writer for The Athletic, talked to Kenny Dillingham, who's the OC at Oregon. And he said he didn't call plays at Oregon. Bo Nix called the plays. And spoke about Nix after draft. Had full power to check plays at the line of scrimmage and set protections. And the Broncos had insight into just how much Nix did by quizzing second-year lineman, who now plays for the Broncos, of course, Alex Forsyth. He was Oregon center back when Bo Nix was in year one at Eugene. So knowing that, and if you're watching, you can see in the draft on the screen here, their entire draft, Jonah Ellis, the edge rusher, in round three, and then around four, Tony Franklin. You feel any better about Bo Nix?
I think it's still wait and see.
Okay.
And everybody and people have said it. This is a Sean Payton arrogant pick, if that makes sense.
What does that mean?
That means to me that he believes that no one else saw him as a first-round talent, I don't think.
Right.
But Sean Payton did see something that maybe we're all missing. And he ends up being a Pro Bowl type corner, and then this will be an A draft. But if he ends up failing, then it's not going to be a very good draft at all, because they went all in, and they had to after they moved on from Russell Wilson on this Bo Nix. But Sean Payton saw something in Bo Nix and his system, what he liked, whether it was the intelligence, everything, the experience, everything he did that other people didn't see, that says that this guy, he believes, is going to be the quarterback of the future and the franchise quarterback for the Denver Broncos.
What about the talking point that Bo Nix just does? And I think it's
It's not talking point. It's what you see on tape.
No. But Bo Nix does exactly what Sean Payton needs a quarterback to do. I mean, that feels like you could put just about any quarterback in there who can throw a slant and a quick screen. I'm not trying to belittle Bo Nix. My point is that it feels like it's a little more complicated than that.
Yeah. You mean Sean Payton?
Sean Payton, yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, no, I think his offense, he'll adjust his offense a little bit to what Bo Nix does well, too. But Sean Payton couldn't get Russell Wilson right.
Right.
So this will be interesting to see.
Right. It's not as easy as just saying, well, it'll work. Okay. Jonah Ellis. I like Jonah Ellis a little more than you, but you're okay with that in the third round. That feels about right.
Yeah, they needed edge rush, and I think that he'll be in a rotation right away. I didn't think he was as impressive versus the run, but as a situational pass rusher on third downs, I think he'll give him some definitely juice off the edge.
And they needed to get wide receivers. Jerry Jeudy's now in Cleveland. They got Troy Franklin in round four. They got Chris Abraham-Strain, the cornerback, in round five. I liked him. I think we both liked both those guys on day two. And then Audric Estime, we thought had a chance to go a little bit earlier. He ran the 4.71, but again, more depth there in the backfield. So any comments on those players in terms of over under?
No, I think this was a really good after the Bo Nix, whether you want to call it a controversial pick or not. But I think Jonah Ellis will help him. I think Troy Franklin, even though I wasn't a huge fan of his, they moved up and the value they got in the fourth round. I think everybody thinks that's great value for his ability to go down and stretch the field. Chris Abraham-Strain is almost as physical as we saw Rakestraw play. And I think he can play inside now. So I think he'll be a help. I don't know if he's going to be the heir apparent opposite of Surtain. Mm-hmm. But I think he'll contribute right away as a rookie. And then Estime, I think, is a big bruising, pounding back who I thought had the best nose for the end zone out of any of the backs. Cause anytime he got near 5 yards and in, he was going to score. And I think he plays faster. You watched, I think it was a Stanford game. He plays a lot faster than what he timed at the combine.
Yeah. You know, what's funny about Stanford. Every time I went to watch a player, whether on offense or defense, if they had played Stanford, that was their career game. Stanford hit a rough patch last year. So Stanford helping Audric Estime get drafted higher. All right. One last thing. So we'll do your grades, our grades real quick here. You gave the Broncos a B. I gave them a B minus because you don't do pluses or minuses. So we're in the same ballpark. One trade that stuck out to me, this wasn't a draft day trade, but I went back and looked. I think on draftpicker.com is what it's called. And on January 31st, 2023, so a year and a half ago almost, Broncos traded 2024 third round pick, a 2023 first round pick, and a 2024 second round pick for Sean Payton. Those picks became Brian Brzee, Christian Haynes, and Edge Cooper. So those are three starters, potential starters, for a head coach. Now, obviously, if you ball out at Sean Payton, it's fine. But right now, this looks like a lopsided trade.
Yeah, but you're not going to know that for 3 years down the road. Yeah. So if those guys all end up being Pro Bowlers or legit starters in the league, and Sean Payton picks Bo Nix and it doesn't pan out, then I would say that was a lopsided trade.
Yeah. So far, Mickey Loomis is in the lead, but we got a long way to go here. All right. Cool. Anything else you had on that, Rick?
No, I still think they need, I was looking at some over their roster and stuff. They still, you know, I think they still should look at some corners out there. If there's any vet corners out there, I don't know how much cap space they have to do anything. You know, they lost Cushenberry. I don't know who's going to start at center is another area they're probably going to have to look at. And then, you know, with them losing some linebackers, you know, Jewel, who left in free agency. I don't know if they really addressed that in this draft. So they're going to have Barton and some of those guys step up. So there's still holes on this roster that I think they'll continue to try to look and fill, if not before the end of the OTAs, but definitely during training camp. And when we get down to the 53, I think they'll still have some holes they're going to try to fill, because this is a hole. Since Sean Payton got there over the last 2 years, I don't have a percentage, but I bet a majority of the original team he came with is gone.
They have not drafted an offensive lineman in the first round, I believe, since 2017. That was something fans were potentially clamoring for. I don't think Bo Nix was on their radar until late. The other thing is, and I saw this in the Athletic article as well, Drew Sanders, who we talked to at the Combine last year, transferred from Alabama to Arkansas, played off-ball linebacker there, played edge at Alabama, and he left obviously because of Christian Braswell, Will Anderson, and Dallas Turner. There's some conversation he might be an edge rusher now, and then you have Jonah Ellis, and that complicates the off-ball linebacker conversation you're just having. So they got a lot of things to sort out.
Yep.
I mentioned last year's draft class. I think Marvin Mims was a home run. Drew Sanders, Riley Moss, to be determined. We heard about Alex Forsythe. He was a seventh-round pick. So last year's draft wasn't bad. They just got to get the quarterback situation right.
Yep.
All right. Las Vegas Raiders. In retrospect, it feels like the Raiders would have taken Michael Penix Jr. had he been there at 13, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think they would have.
Yeah, we were talking ourselves into, well, you got to trade down for him, and little did we know that the Falcons had plans. All right. What do the Raiders do? Brock Bowers is where it started. That sort of, I don't say a bad taste in my mouth, but it was a weird start. They've drafted two tight ends the last 2 years with top 35 picks. That's unconventional. But Jackson Powers Johnson, I like. Delmar Glaze, we didn't talk a lot about, but he had a pretty good final season and a pretty good combine. DeCameron Richardson and the secondary for help there. Tommy Eichenberg is the young man we talked to. Dylan Lobby, the running back out of New Hampshire as well. And then they got Trey Taylor, MJ Devonshire to wrap things out, the safety and the cornerback from Air Force Pittsburgh. Anything stick out to you about this draft class, Rick? Because at the top, again, like the Broncos, sort of weird, but then everything else started to fall into place.
Yeah, no, I think knowing Tom Telesco, he's going to follow his board to a T. When the quarterback was not there, they weren't going to reach on a quarterback. It sounded like, I don't know if they tried to move up to go get one or not. But if they did not like a quarterback, they were very patient, let the board fall to them. Is Brock Bowers a need? maybe not because of drafting Myers last year, but he could have been a top 10 pick if all those quarterbacks didn't push these guys down, because he is a unique playmaker in the passing game. And I think that when you're sitting in that GM seat, you have a blue player, or you think's a Pro Bowl player, staring at you in the face, you can't pass him up. So I give credit to Telesco, even though where there's some other needs that he could have went in a different direction, but he stayed true to his board. And I thought they got great value if with Brock Bowers sitting there. And if they didn't draft Myers, and he didn't draft Myers last year, but let's say they needed a tight end, you would have gave us an A-plus grade.
Yeah.
So I think we grade hard because it didn't fill a need, yet I really thought that Telesco did a good job staying to his board. And if there's a Pro Bowl player up there you think is going to be a Pro Bowl player, regardless of position, you have to take him.
Right. If they had taken Michael Penix Jr. at 13 and the rest of this draft unfolded the way it did for them, it's an A. So fair enough. At the end of the day, Rick, you gave them a B. Again, I gave them a B minus, the same as the Broncos there. Couple things here. They did sign Carter Bradley, our guy out of South Alabama, is an undrafted free agent. I don't know if he has a chance to make the roster, but that's the quarterback they got. He had a good Senior Bowl. Yeah. I just don't think he's going to be a starter, but that's a note there. And also, you talk about Tom Telesco, and we're going to talk about eight teams today. If I had to guess, the average number of draft day trades is probably between like 2.5, 3.5. How many draft day trades do you think the Las Vegas Raiders made over the weekend?
None.
Zero. Tom Telesco, every time it was their turn to pick, he picked, and apparently his phone was off the entire 3-day draft process there. So they got their guys, and
yeah, and I think they got great value with Jackson Powers Johnson. I think he's an instant starter right away, a guard or center. Glaze, I think you liked him a little better than I did. I don't know if they're going to move him to the right side because they need a starting right tackle.
Right.
He flopped back and forth at the Senior Bowl. They actually played him some inside a guard where he struggled some, but he does have some athletic upside to develop. And then it's like Telesco just, hey, we're not moving. Let the board fall to us. Let's take the best players. They keep falling to us off the board. So I give him credit for being as disciplined as he was, blocking out the outside noise and just taking best players as they came down to their pick.
Did you guys do research on the value of draft day trades? Because as I went through these anecdotally the other day, I was like, oh my gosh, the X team gave up a lot to get the player. And a lot of times these players don't work out. I'm talking like in the second and third round. Never mind the first round. Do you have research on that before you went in?
Oh yeah. No, we did all kinds of analytics on what buckets to trade up to. Yeah. So, you know, between 44 and let's say 62, that's a bucket where everybody in that bucket performed relatively the same way. So if you want to trade up higher in the third round to get up into 62 to the 44 range, you had a better chance. If you're bored and you evaluated correctly, you had a better chance on hitting on players. So We didn't do the points as much as we looked at the buckets and where those players fell in those buckets and how we would move up or down according to – but work within those buckets, if that makes sense.
Yes, sir. All right, next up. Oh, you want to take? Let's take a quick break here. Let's take a quick break, and we'll come back, and we'll hit the Chargers and the Chiefs in the AFC West right after this.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, everyone. It's Michael Richards here. You might have seen me on CBS working on their Champions League coverage over the last couple of years. I wanted to tell you about an exciting new podcast that I've been working on. It's called The Rest Is Football. It's me, alongside Gary Lineker and Alan Shearer, two absolute legends of the game. The show combines topical debate from the world of soccer along with outrageous tales from our careers. And I mean outrageous. Just search The rest is football wherever you get your podcasts. All the best from Big Meats.
All right. Los Angeles Chargers, a team that actually didn't do very much in the way of trading either, even though Tom Telesco is no longer there. But they took Joe Alt at 5. Did we get any resolution on where he's going to play?
I don't know yet. I think we'll find that out as they come. The rookies come in this weekend, and then see how they line them up. So it'll be interesting to see where they line them up.
But you've talked about this before. They've had those conversations before you draft.
Yeah,
you work it out. You don't
really have. They have a plan in place before the draft.
So when we did, I went back, I was looking to see what we said. After day one, we did the 2 p.m. Friday podcast for CBS Sports Network, and we did a top 10 mock draft for the top of the second round. And we had, I believe, Ladd McConkey going to the Patriots at 34. This is the only trade that the Chargers made all weekend. They traded from 37 to 34 to get Ladd McConkey. And all it cost them was a fifth-round pick, and that feels worth it. The Patriots traded down to get Jalen Polk a few picks later. But Ladd McConkey went where we thought he was going to go, just went to a different team. I don't know why you would pass on Ladd McConkey unless you're concerned about the injuries or maybe the fit, but this feels like a pretty easy choice, right?
Yeah, they have no choice. They had to address the offensive line. They had to address who they have at receiver, you know.
Right.
Quentin Johnston has to play better this year. They got rid of Mike Williams, and they traded away Keenan Allen. So they're revamping that receiver room. But, you know, they're definitely going to focus on running the football because that's what Greg Roman does. That's what he did when he was the Baltimore OC and when he was with Harbaugh. So plan on them running the ball and not putting, at least right now, as much resource into the receiver position as maybe other teams do.
Yeah, they have Josh Palmer. They drafted Darius Davis last year, which maybe is going to look smarter because of the change in the kickoff rules. But he was a third-round pick. And I think that's in part why I think Jaquan Jackson's a better player than Darius Davis. You agree
with that? Yeah. Darius Davis was a little bit of a gadget guy more than anything. But I thought – you know, getting some of the receivers they got. Brandon Rice may help him on the outside. Vital, the running back from Troy, I really think fits their scheme because he's in the line between the tackles runner. So he's the poor man version to me of Corum, who they probably would have taken. He was there. And
on your bet.
Yeah, but that's a good scheme fit for his style of running. Because he is a best in between the tackles runner. And then, you know, I like Cam Hart, liked him a lot down at the Senior Bowl. So he's going to see how quickly he develops. But I think the whole thing, will they be better in the run defense? And that's going to start with Junior Colston. And he already knows the defense because he came, the defensive coordinator from Michigan, Minner, came with Harbaugh. So I imagine he's going to be a plug and play day one starter, and he's going to definitely help solidify that defense and be able to, which is a rarity, have a rookie come in and teach the defense to a lot of the veterans because if he's already familiar with the system.
Did you ever hire a coach from college that made that transition easier in terms of evaluating those players? Because it feels like that saves you a lot of time on the back end, doesn't it?
What do you mean?
Like Harbaugh comes in, so he knows all the Michigan kids. Like you're not having to, you have even more insight than you would have with the Midwest.
He's coached them. He knows their families. He recruited them. You know, he knows them inside and out.
Yeah. I didn't know if you had any experience bringing in an assistant or something that had, you know, came from University X and helped you during the spring. No.
Yeah. The only one I would say when I was back in Miami, when we hired Coach Saban.
Oh, I've heard of him.
Yeah, he had pretty good insight on college players and everybody that he recruited. And even if he didn't have them at Alabama, he knew them because of how much time they put in recruiting the kids. That's when you're recruited back in without having to worry about the NIL money.
Right. So
that's another rabbit hole we can go
down. That was a different animal. He came from LSU, by the way, Michigan State at that point. Is that right?
Yeah.
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 He was Plexico Burress' coach when the Steelers took him. That's how long ago that was. My goodness. All right. So, yeah, this team, I mean, they fill needs. This team is better on paper. We'll see how it works out. There's a clip going around shortly after the draft when they had rookie OTAs or rookie minicamp in Kansas City, and Xavier Worthy dropped the pass. And people were about that. But people are going to have some comments on the minutia of whatever happens in the coming days, because there's nothing else to talk about. All right, speaking of the Chiefs, and in case I didn't say it, Chargers A from Rick, A minus from me. The only A, the minus was just the Joe Alt thing. If they have it figured out, it's figured out. But I want to see how that works out in terms of where he plays or where Rashawn Slater plays. Next up, the Kansas City Chiefs. We talked about Xavier Worthy a moment ago. Here's the trade. 2024 first round pick, pick number 32. And they had to give up a third round pick, the Chiefs did, and a seventh round pick to go from 32 to 28. On paper, that feels rich, doesn't it?
Well, again, everything, it feels rich until you, if they're good players, it's not. If it they're bad players, then yeah, it's rich.
All right. So they got Xavier Legette from 28 to 32. And then pick 95, the third round pick, ended up being Dwayne Carter going to the Bills. And then a seventh rounder, Travis Clayton, to the Bills as well. The Chiefs also got a fourth round pick back, I should note. So that evens it out a little bit. And that turned into Jaden Hicks. So again, to your point. So Xavier Worthy at the top. We've talked about him. Kingsley Suamataya. And the interesting thing about Kingsley Suamataya is that there was a trade. He was drafted 64th overall. At 63, excuse me, he was drafted 63rd. At 63 is where the 49ers were sitting, and they needed offensive line help. And they traded one spot back with the Chiefs to allow the Chiefs to come up and get offensive linemen, which tells you how they felt about it, number one. But that's interesting how two different teams who are incredibly successful, both in the Super Bowl last year, have different views of how to grade these players. And I think sometimes that gets lost on us because if a player didn't go until X pick, he must be a bust or must be, going to destined for stardom. But different teams have different grades, no matter how good those teams are.
Yeah, like San Francisco, if that was their guy, if Kingsley was their guy, they wouldn't have traded. Just take the guy and move on. But apparently he was lower on their board than he was on Kansas City, so they were willing to make that trade.
And one pick later, the 49ers took Renardo Green. We'll talk about that in a little bit. Jared Wiley, your guy, went in the fourth round. And then Jaden Hicks, our buddy Pete Prisco's guy, the safety out of Washington State, went in round four. Let's see. I mean, this feels – you gave him a B. I gave him an A. Why'd you give the Chiefs a B? Because I think this draft, especially the top, feels like they did a lot of damage.
Yeah, I just don't know. Xavier Worthy, is he worth moving all the way up to go get for a lean receiver? And if he ends up being, Devontae Smith as they try to compare him to, then, yeah, it was worth it. If he ends up being Jameson Williams, then no, it wasn't worth it because Jameson Williams has some drops coming out of Alabama. And Detroit, if you have to poke one hole, and maybe they're first in Brad Holmes, and I wouldn't call him a miss yet because he's made some plays, but was he worthy of the 12th overall pick in the draft when Detroit went up and traded for Jameson Williams? Can he stretch the field? Yes. Is he fast? Yes. But is he a disciplined route runner and he has some drops? So hopefully he'll continue to develop. But Xavier Worthy, I don't see Tyreek Hill in him.
No, that's a huge burden to put on anyone for sure. That Jameson Williams trade, Brad really moved up a long way too. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
But this time,
Minnesota.
You weren't there though.
No.
You were in Las Vegas with us.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was fun. That's back when you used to wear ties. Remember that?
No.
Your first day on the job, you wore a tie. Then after that, you're like, I'm done.
Yeah. It was so hot.
It was not cold. It was something else. Jared Wiley, he'll get on the field if he can block, I would imagine. But in terms of offensive production, do you want to gander a guess? Because no one thought Sam LaPorta was going to do what he did. I mean.
Well, yeah, he's playing behind a Hall of Famer, so. But I think he'll develop into a I don't think he'll be as good as Kelsey, but similar body frame, similar catching radius, maybe not as athletic, but this kid's pretty athletic for as big as he is. But I think he's going to create some mismatches in the passing game. And I think they saw some, I don't know if he's the heir apparent, but they saw some traits similar to Kelsey, which I did as well.
And they got him late in the fourth. So, I mean, it's
when they draft Kelsey.
As you like to say, no brainer. And you said, I think we talked about this, both Kelseys were drafted later because they were undersized.
Yep.
Yeah. Today,
both are going in the first round. One's going to, both are going to be Hall of Famers. Imagine that. Two sons, fourth round, or day two, day three picks, Hall of Famers. Both have won titles. Pretty good run here. All right, we're going to take another quick break here, Rick. We come back, we'll hit the Cardinals and the rest of the NFC West right after this.
It only takes 2 minutes of sheer horror.
A new Paramount Plus original docuseries.
We were dealing with a serial killer preying on elderly women.
A cold-blooded killer hidden in plain sight.
He's suffocating people with pillows.
Leaving corpses all over Texas.
How did it happen?
I was responsible for her. The guilt is immeasurable.
They covered it up.
Pillowcase Murders, now streaming exclusively on Paramount Plus.
Let's go!
It's the most all-star studded challenge ever. And this time, it's every competitor for themselves.
Best challenge ever!
The Challenge All-Stars. New season now streaming on Paramount Plus. Go to ParamountPlus.com to try it free. Terms apply.
All right. Arizona Cardinals. I'll get the drama out of the way early. A and A plus. A from Rick, A plus from me. This draft. Monty Austinport in back-to-back years has done pretty well. This one started with, of course, Marvin Harrison Jr., who has yet to sign his name, image, likeness, which some people are angry about, and I do not care. Last year, they had Paris Johnson Jr., just quickly to recap, B.J. Ojulari, who had a really good year that no one talked about. Some guy named Michael Wilson had a good year, too. You remember him, Rick?
Yeah, the guy that was hurt all the time. He's still hurt.
The Wilsons are taking over the NFL is what I'm hearing, Rick. Between the Steelers and Michael Wilson. All right, so Marvin Harrison Jr. I don't know who gave these grades. Oh, P did. That's a B+. That's stupid. It's an A+. If you're watching on YouTube on the website. Darius Robinson, I love that pick at the end of the first round. Max Melton, I know Rick liked that pick. They got in round two. Trey Benson, another home run hit. I'd say Adams was Rick's guy. You'd like Tip Ryan in the tight end?
Yeah, as a blocker.
So they got two Illinois players in back-to-back rounds, and Isaiah.
Both of those kids are tough throwback type kids, so they'll set a tone up front for the Cardinals on offense.
And then they get Elijah Jones, cornerback out of BC, who had a good Senior Bowl. Dadrian Taylor-Demerson, who Rick and I agree was a really good player in the middle of the defense for Texas Tech as a safety. Xavier Thomas, designated pass rusher, former five-star, just battled injuries at Clemson. Christian Jones, who
another one of my favorites. This was a really good pick.
Yeah. I like Christian Jones. I was talking to our buddy Lee J. Duzable, who wasn't as high on Christian as we were, but he went in the fifth, late in the fifth. What are we doing?
Yeah. And he had a solid Senior Bowl at right tackle. And I think he has some flexibility to move inside as well.
So, yeah, this team, you know, people are joking. And maybe it's something Pete Prisco said as well. So I take it with a grain of salt. It feels like this team has a chance to win more than they lose. Let's start there.
I think they have a chance to go above 500. I don't know if I'm ready to say, and we would have said the same thing about Houston last year, but is this the team that's kind of like no one's talking about but comes out the gates? And they were competitive, even for the lack of personnel they had last. They were competitive. They went to Philly and beat Philly in Philly.
Oh, you remember that, Debo?
This will be a much more competitive roster, and I think this may be the surprise team of the NFL this year.
I give both these young men. I give Jonathan Gannon a lot of credit for getting the most out of that team in year one, because he gave sort of a quirky press conference, and people were like, "Oh boy, here we go." Looked like Adam Gase looking at the cheeseburgers or whatever that joke was when he got hired by the Jets. And then Drew Petzing as well, the offensive coordinator. Kyler Murray looked like a different player when he came back, and part of that's Kyler. I give him credit for that. But I would imagine part of it's Drew Petzing.
Drew's very smart. And then Nick Rawlins, the defensive coordinator. I know Ganathan, he was also with Minnesota. He was a quality control linebacker coach for us.
And he's incredibly young as well, right?
Yeah. Yeah. All of them extremely young, but extremely bright. And I think just like these players are developing and growing, so are these coaches.
Yeah. So that team, do not sleep on the Cardinals. It's all about Kyler, but Kyler was more impressive than Deshaun Watson at any point last year. Would you agree with that?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, and he's not making whatever.
He's making money now.
All right. I oversold that one.
Hold on. He's able to afford air conditioning out there in the summer.
Yeah, not a swap cooler. All right. So way to go, Chargers. A+. What we got next, Debo? I think we're doing Oh, let me mention quickly before we move on. Oh, man, Debo's got his front and center here, Rick. Oh, the Cardinals also were part of that trade last year with the Will Anderson deal when the Texans moved back up. So they gave up that first-round pick, third overall last year, and a fourth-round pick. And they got in exchange, they moved all, from all these picks. Jahmyr Gibbs was one of the picks. Will Levis was another pick. Darius Robinson pick they kept, and then Elijah Jones. So they moved on from the other two picks that became Jahmyr Gibbs and Will Levis and got more compensation for that as well. So Monty Ossenfort is the anti-Tom Telesco is what I'm saying.
Yes, he's a mover. He's a little bit Howie Roseman-ish.
Yeah. All right, let's go to the Rams. And, Rick, I'm sure you've seen it, although you've been in traction the last 2 days, so maybe you haven't been able to push the buttons on your pewter. But there's a great two-part series in The Athletic by Jordan Rodriguez about the Rams peek behind the curtain in their draft process. So
I haven't seen it.
It's great. So it gives you a glimpse of how they do things. They do things a little differently because they don't necessarily attend the Senior Bowl and don't spend a lot of time at the Combine with everybody. Some people are there, the medical people and all that other stuff. But it gives you a glimpse into Les Snead's horizontal big board and the categories they have, which is also curious. So anyway, check that out. But that'll help inform my decisions here. Rams. Oh, boy. Now, Les Snead, I don't know what his chart says, but he ain't afraid to trade up and give up some compensation.
Yep.
Overpaying sometimes. So we'll talk about that. But you gave the Rams a B. I gave the Rams an A. If I had to guess, because I know you look at it when I think, guess what you're thinking. That compensation isn't because of the Jared Verse pick, which came in 19, which makes sense. It's because of what they had to give up to get Braden Fisk.
Yes.
Is that part of it? All right. So they traded to get Braden Fisk, and they came up from 52 to get up to 39, and they had to give up a ton. But part of the reasoning in the Jordan Rodriguez story was that they love the idea of pairs. And by that, I mean Jared Verse and Braden Fisk, how they played together at Florida State and bringing that with them to L.A. in a post-Aaron Donald world. But you can talk about those two picks and then Blake Corum, who they got in round three.
Yeah, I like the picks. I thought Verse was great value there. He's a speed-to-power guy. Fisk, you know, he rose up the draft boards as through this pre-draft process, starting down how he finished the season to the Senior Bowl, what he did down there, to how he worked out at the Combine, to I'm sure he was very impressive through all the interviews in the pre-draft process. My comp to him was a little bit of the defensive tackle that went in the fourth round, but was much better than that, and played at Cincinnati from Georgia. Geno Atkins.
Oh, Geno. I thought you were going to say Kobe Turner.
No, Geno Atkins. So they're both tone setters, and they play with a lot of passion. And then I really like the combination of Corum and Williams. Two similar type backs, but Williams had some durability issues last year, but had a very productive year, and I think Corum will fit right in with that scheme as well. So I thought the first three picks were solid. It was just getting Fisk, and they had to go up and get, you know, is he going to replace Aaron Donald? I don't think anyone you should put that type of expectation on, because he may be one of the best defensive tackles to ever play in the history of the NFL. But at least they have some young, put Kobe Turner, Fisk, and Jared Verse. That's a pretty good young group that's going to grow and develop over the next couple of years.
Yeah, and looking at, I mean, last year they crushed it too. Steve Avila was their first pick in round two. He was a starter at guard. Byron Young, the edge rusher you mentioned out of Tennessee. Kobe Turner, who we spent a lot of time talking about because he was so impressive, almost won Defensive Rookie of the Year. And, of course, Puka Nacua last year. But in terms of the compensation for Braden Fisk, so they traded pick 52, the Rams did, a 2024 fifth-round pick, which became Jeremiah Trotter, and a 2025 second-round pick to the Panthers in order to get Braden Fisk. So they clearly love Braden Fisk, but we'll see if it paid out. But, again, I mean, they did – what they did last year was so impressive that you give them the benefit of the doubt until you don't. So, also, they got Cam Kitchens there. You can see that if you're watching. Bo Limmer, I thought, was a bargain on late day three. And Cam Kitchens is a guy who ran in the 4.6s, and that sort of we thought was going to torpedo his chances to be a day two guy. But the Rams don't care about time speed. They care about play speed. And I think Cam Kitchens played a lot faster than any time. You agree with that?
Yeah. No, he plays faster, but his jumps weren't very explosive either. Didn't have any explosive athletic numbers, but maybe probably one of those guys that you would classify better football player than test guy.
And he feels like a little bit, getting out over my skis here. I can never remember this young man's name. Who's the safety now for the Bills that was originally drafted by the Rams? What's his name?
Oh, Taylor Rapp.
Taylor Rapp. Like, Taylor didn't time well, and he was supposed to go higher than he was. I think Cam has a chance to be a better football player than Taylor, but we'll find out. All right. Let's go to San Francisco, the 49ers. We just talked about him briefly when they traded down out of the Kingsley Sumatea pick at 64 to get Renardo Green at 60, a pick later. But they got Ricky Pearsall, who, as I watched the redraft of our day two second-round redraft, you had Pearsall going 33rd to the Panthers, I believe. So you were right on that one. You didn't share that inside information. Renardo Green around two, the physical corner, who a lot of people think put his stamp on his draft status with the first game of the season against LSU. Dominic Pooney, the Kansas tackle slash guard, he's going to play inside, I would imagine. They got Isaac Arendo as well, the running back. He ran the 4.3s. I didn't think he played that fast. And then Jacob Cowing, the slot receiver out of Arizona, went in round four, 4.3 guy, small catch radius, had some focus drops, but I thought he was a good player in offensive in the return game. So let's start here, Rick. Grades B, B. We both gave him a B. But let's start here. Like, how many wide receivers does this team need? Because they have Ronnie Bell, who they drafted last year. They have Danny Gray, who they drafted 2 years ago out of SMU, and both have been limited in terms of their contributions. Now they have Pierce Hall. They drafted Jacob Cowing, and they have the two big guys, obviously, who are going to have to get paid or move on from at some point next year.
Yeah, I think this one was a little bit of a future pick as well, because I don't know what's going to happen to Ayuk or Deebo Samuel. Are they going to be there after this year? I think this kid fits the scheme extremely well. He can play outside. He can play in. He's a very good route runner. Maybe made the catch of the year down that seam. I can't remember what game it was. And he is an ideal receiver fit for the San Francisco 49ers offense. So I think this is something where, you know, if they decide to move on from Ayuk and Samuel, that they're not going to miss a beat. And you remember, this team already has a pretty good roster in place. There wasn't a lot of holes to fill, except maybe if you wanted to talk about the offensive line a little bit, but they are pretty loaded for bear, and they were active again in free agency because you could have said they could, you know, with Armstead moving on to Jacksonville. But, you know, they went out and signed Leonard Floyd. They got Drake Jackson. They got Gross Modest, who they signed as well. So they reloaded in free agency like they do every year. And then I think the draft is a kind of a supplemental to these guys that eventually develop and end up playing.
I'm looking at all the trades that Howie Roseman made. So, and this pertains to the 49ers. So 49ers traded their third round pick, pick 94, their fourth round pick for 2024 third rounder. Oh, this is the move that Howie made. Oh my gosh. So this is the pick where Howie got Jalix Hunt and the 49ers. And we talked about Kingsley Sumatea. They got Dominic Pooney out of Kansas. So again, you have a chart you're looking at for the trades, and it's happening in 10 minutes or less on day two. How frantic is that, or is that a relatively calm conversation?
It's calm because it's not like you're using a calculator anymore. They actually have these machines called pewters.
You use the pewter?
Yeah. You can actually plug in the numbers, and it actually comes up with the trade value. But again, we looked at the trade. We looked at that, but we looked at more at the buckets we were trading in and out of. And it also has to do with if you have a need to fill and that player is in that upper bucket and that's the last player before it falls off at that position, then maybe you're more aggressive moving up.
Would you ever go off script if you had a gut feeling about a player, like overpay for a player?
We rehearsed it and went through it so many times that I don't know. It was discussed to length and at nauseum, to be honest with you, on potential things you would do during a draft.
That doesn't sound like you to cover every eventuality ahead of time.
Yeah, and you still can't get them all, but we're sure in the heck going to give it a good shot. Trying to even
that makes sense. I think that's the other thing. People, when they try to figure out how these drafts unfold for individual teams, they just think that people are flying by the seat of their pants, but everything's been pretty much planned out as much as you can plan stuff out.
Yeah, and even after you see the board cleared on Thursday and then Friday before the draft, you're talking about all these moves again. Okay, we didn't fill this need. This guy's still here. What if he's there? Do we move up to go get him? Look at the board. There's not a lot of depth behind them. Or, hey, do we potentially trade back because we can get one of these three guys still in that same bucket? So these are ongoing talks. And the best thing about it is you got all day Friday to kind of look at it and rehearse it again. And then Saturday, it's just go, you know, because Saturday it starts early, or you come in the morning, talk about some potential things or guys that you really are targeting on Saturday. And then, hey, do we go up and get this guy if he's still there in the fifth round? A la, you know, we sat there, or, do you know, like we did Stephon Diggs, or I think we moved up in the fourth round to get B-Rob, Brian Robinson, 1 year out of Texas, who ended up being a good player for us, or an Everson Griffin. Do you sit there? Do you move up? Do you move down? I can't remember all this, but we had those ongoing discussions all through the weekend, even though you rehearsed it as much as you could. By the way, now that predict who's going to be on the board, like when you come in Saturday morning, or you come in Friday, you'll know after, you know, the result of the day before.
Unless it's Ricky Pearsall. Like if every player Ricky Pearsall, you get the draft perfect every year. By the way, Debo has his close-ups on us for some reason. I think he wants me to notice your fancy black shirt there. Is that a new shirt?
No, I've had it.
Oh, looks like your club shirt. Like you wore that to the clubs on Friday night on the island?
Yeah.
Look at that. It's a little shiny. Fancy buttons.
It was a gift. It was gifted.
Oh, I didn't think that you picked it out yourself. There was no doubt in my mind that you had nothing to do with that. But you look fancy. I didn't know.
It's got some like fancy stuff inside the collar.
Yeah, look at you. Look at you. You probably
it's island shirt.
Like one of the NFL draft suits. You got like designs inside the jacket.
Yeah, if I undo my shirt, you can see.
You got your
Brian Wilson in the inside. You know.
I was gonna say you got your Maslin Hall of Fame bust in there on the inside. That's what it is. He doesn't like talking about that, Debo. All right. B for the 49ers. Both of us, Rick and Ryan, gave the 49ers Bs. But the Seahawks both got A's from Rick and Ryan. And they've already had some rookie workouts here, Rick, the little mini camps. Are they mini camps or OTAs? What do you call the rookie get together?
Mini camps.
All right. So they had Byron Murphy there, of course. And one of the comments I saw from Mike Sando from The Athletic was that Byron Murphy has not missed leg day when you see him in person. And I think you can confirm that. The other thing is that Mike McDonald, I thought, he sounded a lot like Mike Tomlin, that he was not ready to crown anyone as being the next Hall of Famer after a couple of practices in shorts. And he said that Byron Murphy's conditioning need to be better. I think that's just him probably saying stuff. I don't know if you really care. But I thought that was an interesting
one. It is, because you have to understand that we usually had our rookie mini camp this past weekend because we invited 40 or 50 tryout guys. You notice that these guys that have been through this pre-draft process, and if they've been flying around the country the whole month of March in the beginning of April, they haven't been in their routine since their, you know, pro day. A lot of guys would do their pro day, then get ready to hit the road on visits. And, you know, it's wining and dining and dinners and meetings and things like that. So you got to be careful. And we have some issues with soft tissue injuries if you go hard on these guys when they come in a week after the draft for their first rookie mini camp, because they haven't been doing football stuff because of all the traveling some of these guys have done on the top 30 visits before the draft.
Interesting. So Christian Haynes, we've talked a lot about him out of UConn. He went in the third round. He's going to push for a starting
game. I think he'll be a day one starter for him. I think he's a good player. And he showed that down at the Senior Bowl.
Nasty. He plays on an edge, but in a good way. In fact, Braden Fisk mentioned at the combine, and I went back and looked it up, that the toughest guy, you asked him this question, the toughest guy he faced at the Senior Bowl all week, he said Christian Haynes. And that's why he's a third round pick and has a chance to start. And that offensive line is actually going to be really good. They also got both corners out of Auburn, Nehemiah Pritchett and DJ James. And I saw during the rookie OTAs, they have DJ James, who played mostly outside at Auburn. He might get some reps in the slot, so they'll sort that out. Nehemiah Pritchett played outside during the weekend. So we'll see what all that means. LeMay Out's another interior offensive lineman at Utah they drafted, so they got some depth there. It's hard not to like what they did. I don't have any real concerns or pushback. I mean, they were, I heard that John Schneider said after the first round, they were going to trade down until Byron Murphy was staring him in the face. You had to take him. So they took him there. They do have Leonard Williams, but again, that's not someone you pass on. I mean, we talked about the Commanders taking Johnny Newton at the top of the second round. So you can never have too much depth. You know, you always say you can never have too many edge rushers, but I think having a bunch of disruptive interior defensive linemen is, you can never have too many of those guys either.
Yeah. And a couple of the other guys that I thought they did a really good job on was this Trice Knight, the kid out of UTEP, who I said was played a little bit explosive, but a little bit of a blind dog in a butcher shop mentality. Just needs to get under control. But they lost Bobby Wagner and Jordan Brooks. And then I really liked the tight end, A.J. Barner, because they lost Disner to the Chargers, who was their blocking, Will Disley, who was their blocking tight end. And I think A.J. Barner will step in and fill that role right away as well. So I thought they've got very good football players, and they filled needs as well along the way.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And what did they do last year? Let me look real quick. Because Devin Witherspoon, Jack Smith and Jigba, Derek Hall, Zach Charbonnet, Anthony Bradford, who is going to have to battle Christian Haynes for that job, may have already lost it. So let me ask you this before we get out of here. Of all the teams in the NFC West that we talked about, which team is better on paper which team is best of all the four teams in that division, I guess, after the draft? Not the team that's going to win the most games, but which team helped themselves the most, I guess I should say.
I would say the Arizona Cardinals are the best team that has helped themselves the most, but they had the most holes to fill as well. But they did it with very solid, high-character football players and good football players. So I think Arizona, out of the four teams in the NFC West, is the team that probably closed the gap. I don't know if they're ready to take over as kings of the NFC West, but they've closed the gap on some of those teams, and they're going to be very competitive.
Yeah, I'm interested to see how that works out. In terms of the AFC West, you gave three Bs and an A. So based on that, the Chargers did the most to help themselves, or do you think there's another team?
I would say the Chargers. Denver is going to come down to what Bo Nix is, to be honest with you. And Chiefs, you know, is it worth going up to get a 160-pound receiver? That's yet to be determined. But I think the Chargers, the Raiders didn't get their quarterback filled. So I'm going to say the Chargers are the ones that actually filled a lot of needs by how they're going to run, how Jim Harbaugh is going to run that offense and defense.
Yeah.
It's going to be like Michigan. They're going to run the ball, and they're going to play physical on defense. And that's where all their draft picks seem to be focused on. And they still have some needs at receiver. They still have some needs in some other areas. I think they still need another corner or two. You could tell how the philosophy of building this football team is going to look like.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. Because they got their quarterback. It's just a matter of getting out of their own way, what the Chargers struggle to do. In the Brandon Staley era, for sure. All right, that's it. You got anything else, Rick?
No. I'm excited to go get the off season. You go to your doctors, you go to dermatologists, you go to get your teeth all sharpened and shined. And I've got my sharpened and shined teeth appointment today.
It's funny you say that, because when you, me, and Emery did the mock draft right before the actual draft, the last show, one of the comments on YouTube was, that looks like $100,000 of dental work there. So that's I appreciated the comment, because my teeth compare nothing to Rick's pearly whites, because those things blind you if you don't wear your sunglasses. So good luck on that. And you can take a little break. Hit the hot tub, Rick, so you can get those muscles back in working order.
Oh, yeah. No, it was a grueling week. So
when your body tells you to quit, you just power through?
Yeah, that's when the mental toughness test comes in. You know, when it says stop, you just do more.
All right, well.
It says take two ibuprofen, take three.
So you'll be taking the wheelchair to the dentist's office. I got it. All
Rick
right.
is not a doctor, by the way. Don't take this advice.
He's a doctor of pain.
Yeah, no, that's like Ryan. You always said I had great bedside manner. Maybe I should have looked into the medical field.
Can you imagine? Get up. All right. That's it. That's wrapping episode 156. Thanks as always to my guy Rick. Thanks to Debo for producing, and thanks to all you guys who watch, listen, and comment. Back later this week to talk draft grades for the AFC and NFC South. See you guys then.
This is Tony Kornheiser's show. I'm Tony. You expected someone else? So what exactly is the show about? I don't know. It's a sports show nominally. Football's over, but we're finally at a point where things matter in college basketball, and baseball season is on deck. Greatest three words in the English language, pitchers and catchers. We have some of the best voices come on and explain what matters or what makes an upset, like Ryan does, 9-8. No, that's not an upset. No, yeah, it is, Bob. And if you're lucky, I might just tell you about my search for discounted sleep pants or my worries about what my dog just ate. Listen on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.